The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. The message of the DNC convention was pretty dark, but the Republican convention this week was very much alive. Secretary of State Pompeo from Jerusalem.
What my great fellow Kansan President Eisenhower said, for all that we cherish and justly desire for ourselves or for our children, the securing of peace is the first requisite.
Our First Lady, Melania Trump.
I don't want to use this precious time attacking the other side. That kind of talk only serves to divide the country further.
And Daniel Cameron, the first black attorney general from the state of Kentucky.
And I realize something. No matter who we are, everyone needs a cup of coffee. That lesson stuck with me because despite our differences, we all want the same things. For our children to have more opportunities than we did, to feel the dignity of work.
Matthew Continetti assesses the message from the Democrats in their convention.
It was a sleight of hand convention. I thought that they spent 4 days telling the American people that Joe Biden is a nice guy.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at Hugh Hewitt. And let me invite you to join us now by video. And follow me on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program as well at Town Hall Review. The concept of a virtual presidential convention seemed a contradiction in terms. I admit it, I was a skeptic. Having attended conventions since 2000, I've always thought that the Democrats brought better production values to these quadrennial pageants, relative to the GOP, that is. Starting from behind with a backstage skill set inferior to the lefty Hollywood producers and pressed by changing circumstances brought about by the virus, I just expected a creaky, clunky series of wooden speeches. This week, the president and the RNC presided with great showmanship over the RNC virtual convention. And what a show it was. The cast was large, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Illustrating the strategic advantage of a virtual convention, he spoke to America from Israel, with Jerusalem as his backdrop.
I have a big job as Susan's husband and Nick's dad. Susan and Nick are more safe and their freedoms more secure because President Trump has put his America First vision into action. It may not have made him popular in every foreign capital, but it's worked. What my great fellow Kansan President Eisenhower said, for all that we cherish and justly desire for ourselves or for our children, the securing of peace is the first requisite. Indeed, the primary constitutional function of the national government is ensuring that your family and mine are safe and enjoy the freedom to live, to work, to learn, and to worship as they choose. Delivering on this duty to keep us safe and our freedoms intact, this president has led bold initiatives in nearly every corner of the world. In China, he's pulled back the curtain on the predatory aggression of the Chinese Communist Party. The president has held China accountable for covering up the China virus and allowing it to spread death and economic destruction in America and around the world. And he will not rest until justice is done. He has ensured that the Chinese Communist Party spies posing as diplomats in America are jailed or sent back to China. And he has ended the ridiculously unfair trade arrangement with China that punched a hole in our economy. Those jobs are coming back home. In North Korea, the president lowered the temperature and against all odds got the North Korean leadership to the table. No nuclear tests, no long-range missile tests, and Americans held captive in North Korea came home to their families as did the precious remains of scores of heroes who fought in Korea. Today, because of President Trump, NATO is stronger, Ukraine has defensive weapon systems, and America left a harmful treaty so our nation can now build missiles to deter Russian aggression. And in the Middle East, when Iran threatened, the president approved a strike that killed the Iranian terrorist, Qasem Soleimani. This is the man most responsible for the murder and maiming of hundreds of American soldiers and thousands of Christians across the Middle East. And you'll recall, too, that when the president took office, radical Islamic terrorists had beheaded Americans, and ISIS controlled a territory in the size of Great Britain. Today, because of the president's determination and leadership, the ISIS caliphate is wiped out. It's gone. Its evil leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, is dead. And our brave soldiers, they're on their way home. The president exited the U.S. from the disastrous nuclear deal with Iran and squeezed the Ayatollah, Hezbollah, and Hamas. The president, too, moved the U.S. embassy to this very city of God, Jerusalem, the rightful capital of the Jewish homeland. And just 2 weeks ago, the president brokered a historic peace deal between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. This is a deal that our grandchildren will read about in their history books. You know, as a soldier, I saw firsthand people desperate to flee to freedom. The way each of us can best ensure our freedoms is by electing leaders who don't just talk, but who deliver. An American hostage, imprisoned in Turkey for 2 years, Pastor Andrew Brunson, said upon his release that he survived his ordeal with these words of Scripture: "Be faithful, endure, and finish well. If we stay the course, we will." May God richly bless you, and may God bless our great nation, the United States of America.
In between the two conventions, I had the privilege of speaking with Matthew Continetti, author and resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. We discussed how the DNC would compare with the coming RNC. We agreed that the Republican convention wouldn't have much competition. We spoke on the Hugh Hewitt Show. What did you make of the glaring gaps, in my view, at the DNC?
I thought, Hugh, that it was a sleight-of-hand convention. I thought that they spent 4 days telling the American people that Joe Biden is a nice guy, something that a lot of us already kind of knew.
Yes.
What they didn't do is explain what they plan to accomplish in both the domestic and foreign policy spheres if Biden wins this election. And I think that's to the party's detriment, especially on the issue of national security. As you point out, China was mentioned once in Biden's speech. They talked about the supply chain. That was it. Nothing about the Chinese cover-up of the origins of this virus. Nothing about China's threat to the balance of power in the Pacific. Nothing about China's tech war on the United States. And then, of course, Iran, I think, was barely mentioned, perhaps by John Kerry. But, of course, when John Kerry mentions Iran, you should run in the other direction.
That's a very good phrase, Matt, and I might steal it, a sleight-of-hand convention. Now, I do think Chris Coons did a fine job underscoring, I mean, really five-star job underscoring Joe Biden's character and how likable he is.
I think Biden has faced three challenges on his way to winning the presidency. The first was his vice presidential selection. I think we can say that that was underwhelming. And he backed himself into a corner by embracing identity politics. And at the end of the day, politics dictated that Kamala Harris was going to be the choice.
Yes.
And I don't think people believe that Harris's speech was as powerful or winning as some of the others that were delivered over the course of the fortnight. His second task was the convention. And I think expectations, as you say, were very low. As long as Biden didn't pass out, he was going to rise to the occasion. And he gave, in my view, the best speech of his 50-year career in politics. But, you know, now he has to actually campaign, and he has to meet the third challenge, which is going to be these debates. And I've thought for a long time that the debates this year will be the most important in memory. And everything that's happened in the last week, I think, has reinforced that view.
And I don't think Joe Biden gets asked difficult questions like the JCPOA, like the $1.9 billion they gave him in cash, like Hunter Biden and China. I don't think the Beltway Manhattan media elite are inclined at all to press him, Matt. Am I going to be pleasantly surprised?
No. I think you're right on the money. But this is one of Donald Trump's skills as a politician, is he doesn't care about the referees, right? Just contrast the debate performances of Mitt Romney in 2012 and Donald Trump in 2016. In 2012, when Candy Crowley shut Romney down about Benghazi and the Obama administration, Romney didn't follow up. Romney is you know, he's a staid, solid person. He's a gentleman. Donald Trump, of course, does not care what the media thinks. And they will throw Biden softballs, but Trump will make his arguments. There's no question about that. And he will mention Hunter, and he will mention China, and he will mention the Iran deal. I think as biased as the referees will be, Trump is there, and that will counteract it.
Midway through the Republican National Convention, we heard from our First Lady, Melania Trump. As a lady of resolve, but also marked by sweetness, she addressed a large group in the newly renovated Rose Garden Tuesday evening. Following the barrage of vitriol on Twitter, Chris DeGaul spoke with Hogan Gridley, press secretary for the Trump campaign. From AM 990, The Answer in Philadelphia.
The sisterhood, the American left, you know, all the ladies who are out there celebrating the unanimity amongst the ladies, coming out in full-throated attack for Melania Trump, Bette Midler making fun of her English. Kathy Griffin with a much more nuanced tweet to just F that B. Remarkable. And again, I remind you, line of the night, as far as I'm concerned from her speech.
As you have heard this evening, I don't want to use this precious time attacking the other side. Because as we saw last week, that kind of talk only serves to divide the country further.
This speech by Mrs. Trump, I mean, she knows, they know, everyone understands. When the First Lady speaks, she does it very seldom. But when she does it, it's impactful, it's important, and last night was.
You know, English isn't her first language. Look, I think you've seen a couple of different things here. We've talked about how the Democrat convention was so, so gloomy, so dark. The picture they painted of this country is just a flat-out lie. They tried to sell to the American people that this country is not just inherently evil, but it's the cause of all the world's problems. But they also said, hey, Donald Trump's bad. Okay, yeah, we got that. We know you don't like him. And number two is, you know, Joe Biden's a nice guy. Great. Well, my granddad's a nice guy. I don't want him anywhere near the Oval Office. You know, you compare and contrast that with what we're talking about. Not just the greatness of America. It is the land of opportunity. I mean, it is the land of heroes. You're going to see some of those themes go through the rest of the week. But to talk about how we're a beacon of hope. We're a beacon of strength and compassion, of freedom across this planet. That should be celebrated. And you know, we're obviously about America being first. They're about it's America's fault. And I think those are two clearly different themes that you're seeing now. And it's a reason why so many on the left are upset, is because they understand when they had their chance, what they spent their time doing was running down the country. And I don't think the American people are going to buy what they're selling.
Coming up.
Less than an hour after it, without knowing any of the facts, he went out there and he condemned the cops in our state.
Kenosha's day has arrived when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. This COVID-19 crisis has been straining the limits of our constitutional system. Over the next few years, we'll see a generation of new and grounded policy leaders emerge. They'll be prepared at Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more about the deadline for application at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Kenosha is a mid-sized city in a beautiful setting on Lake Michigan. Known for museums and parks, it prospers in part as a result of its proximity to both Milwaukee and Chicago. That image was shattered last week following the tragic police shooting of a black man, Jacob Blake. It did not take long for chaos to follow, riots, fires, and then shooting. I turned to a regular on my program, Congressman Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District. Our conversation began with a clip of Chris Peterson, CFO of a dairy farm in Minnesota, speaking at the Republican convention.
Many people probably don't realize that our country is one of the few in the world that produces nearly all of its own food. President Trump understood and again took steps to provide the supports we needed. President Trump took the necessary action knowing that agriculture is our backbone and strength, critical to our national security.
I could not believe on Twitter last night people made fun of her. She was remarkable.
She was great. We had a couple Wisconsinites there on the stage last night, and I think it's great what they're doing, just highlighting ordinary Americans, Midwesterners, and talking about a lot of substantial policy issues and connecting those policy issues to actually improving people's lives, particularly people that have been in very difficult situations. I've just welcomed the fact that we're actually talking about actual real policy issues, which was noticeably absent from anything that happened at the DNC last week.
I don't know how far away Kenosha is from your district. I've never been to Kenosha. Two people are dead. Another is struggling for their life. Jacob was shot on Sunday in Kenosha. What in the heck is going on?
I think we have a tendency to look in Wisconsin, look at Chicago and certainly New York and L.A. and San Francisco and think, well, chaos there can't spread here. But obviously we're seeing it right now. And tragically, now two more Wisconsinites are dead. And I don't know how that helps anybody. It certainly doesn't help Jacob Blake. It doesn't help bring our state together. And the situation is continuing to spiral out of control. And it will continue to spread and spiral if Governor Evers does not act. And in the aftermath of Sunday's shooting, less than an hour after it, without knowing any of the facts, he went out there and he condemned the cops in our state. He talked about it as a merciless killing at the hands of law enforcement, and he connected it to Wisconsin's cycle of systemic racism and injustice. The responsible position for anybody in public office is to try and take down the temperature, but our governor has poured gasoline on the fire. And now for days, we've seen rioters in Kenosha attack police officers with bricks, destroy businesses, set cars on fire, shatter windows at a local high school. And the governor, by all accounts, refused the offer of additional National Guard support from President Trump. And I just don't understand that decision as anything other than a political decision. We have to get a handle on this. We cannot allow violence. Otherwise, violence will continue to beget more violence, and that is fundamentally unacceptable.
I saw your lieutenant governor. I know Evers has been bad. Your lieutenant governor was out of control. I mean, it was incendiary what he had to say, and I am shocked. And I wonder what people in Wisconsin think about their governor and about this reaction.
Well, I certainly don't know anyone in law enforcement in my neck of the woods or across the state that thinks the governor is doing a good job. Or if they did 72 hours ago, that ended unceremoniously. This is incredibly irresponsible. Hugh, the position you articulated is the right position. None of us know, watching a video on social media, what actually happened.
The Kenosha story did not dominate the RNC, but it certainly has law enforcement officials on alert across the nation. In Kentucky, the state's top law official had to be concerned. Nonetheless, Daniel Cameron, Kentucky's first black attorney general, was able to deliver a bold and eloquent speech at the RNC. Here's my Salem colleague, radio talk show host, Mike Gallagher.
I think it's worth hearing every word. Here he is.
Good evening. My name is Daniel Cameron. I'm 34 years old and the first African-American attorney general in Kentucky history. I was raised in Kentucky, just a few miles from Abraham Lincoln's birthplace. Our first Republican president believed in compassion, self-reliance, freedom, equality, and justice. Sadly, there are some who don't believe in this wisdom or in the better angels as they tear down the statues of people like Ulysses S. Grant and even Mr. Lincoln himself. And for Republicans, our heroes are those who propelled an imperfect nation ever forward, always striving to make life better for everyone. Even as anarchists mindlessly tear up American cities, we Republicans do recognize those who work in good faith towards peace, justice, and equality. In fact, it was General Dwight Eisenhower, a future Republican president, who said, democracy is a system that recognizes the equality of humans before the law. And I realized something. No matter who we are, everyone needs a cup of coffee. That lesson stuck with me because despite our differences, we all want the same things.
for our children to have more opportunities than we did, to feel the dignity of work. Joe Biden is a backwards thinker in a world that is craving forward-looking leadership. There's no wisdom in his record or plan, just a trail of discredited ideas and offensive statements. Joe Biden would destroy jobs, raise our taxes, and throw away the lives of countless unborn children. And he is captive to the radical left, a movement committed to cancel culture and the destruction of public discourse. They believe your skin color must dictate your politics. And if you fail to conform while exercising your God-given right to speak and think freely, they will cut you down. President Trump believes his highest duty is to the American worker. The choice is clear. This country's many faces comprise a family, not separate parts to be divided against each other. And like any family, we care for one another. We grieve together. We share our burdens and our struggles, and we celebrate our successes. And though we fuss and fight, we are not enemies. We are Americans, united by a collective faith in our Constitution and laws and the fundamental fairness they represent. We are defenders of life and of individual liberty, and we carry the mantle of Eisenhower and of Reagan to be a force for good in this world, and one that must always be reckoned with. That's my Republican Party, the party of Lincoln, that believes America is an indispensable nation, an evergreen tree, standing tall in a turbulent world. And that's why I am voting for Donald Trump for president. Thank you, and God bless.
Now, I want you to compare that with the reality on the ground of Joe Biden, and as Steve Cortez writes, the supposed moderate has proved willing to embrace the radical leftists who now control the Democrat Party. I want you to compare Daniel Cameron's message with the message of the hard left's policy priorities. Steve Cortez writes over, I saw this in the New York Post, as rioters sow disorder in cities across the United States, Biden and the Democrats said not a word in condemnation. As violent crime spikes in blue states, in blue cities, victimizing mostly poor people of color, Biden and the Democrats offered no solutions besides the rhetoric of racial pandering.
Coming up.
It's a very pro-Russian country. Their culture is very integrated with Russia. Everybody speaks Russian. So there's it's not like the Ukraine. People should never confuse that what's going on here is what's going on in Ukraine.
Problems in Belarus. When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt continues in a moment. Our program is coming in today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. They are preparing grounded leaders who are impacting public policy and serving in the public square. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Hugh Hewitt. The country of Belarus, or Belarusia, is in a historic hot spot. Bordered by Russia on the northeast and the Ukraine to its south, Belarus is a former Soviet Union satellite state. But lately, its president, Alexander Lukashenko, in office for over 25 years now, may have crossed a bridge too far. Here's my Salem colleague, Sebastian Gorka, with James Carafano of the Heritage Foundation.
What's going on in Europe, on the easterly edges of Europe, Jim?
Right. So the Cold War never ended in the perspective that the entire Soviet sphere of control disappeared. Because there are nations that, in a sense, have a relationship with Russia today that almost duplicates the relationship with the Soviet Union. And
which they actually call the near abroad.
Right.
Right, just to...
And Belarus is one of those. And it's been ruled by Lukashenko for decades. It's been the country. They have elections. For the first time in maybe forever, they actually had real political opposition. And many people think that he actually fraudulently...
Stole
the election. And so that puts Lukashenko in a tough place, because actually Lukashenko the last couple of years has been looking for ways to engage with the West to kind of balance out the relationship with Putin and maybe become a little more independent. But now he's just scared.
Because of the nascent opposition.
Right. And so he's turning back to the opposition and looking for support from Russia. And we got to be clear on this. The people in the streets of Belarus are fighting for their vote to count. That I don't think that's up for. But having said that, that doesn't mean that they want to join the European Union tomorrow, and they don't necessarily like the Russians. It's a very pro-Russian country. Their culture is very integrated with Russia. Everybody speaks Russian. So there's it's not like the Ukraine. People should never confuse that what's going on here is what's going on in Ukraine. This is a pro-Russian people.
But they want their votes to actually matter.
Right. But they want to get rid of Lukashenko. But here's the one thing Putin will not stand is having a Belarus, which essentially potentially could move out of the Soviet orbit. So he's nervous. He wants to act. Of course, the Western Europeans are nervous. The most nervous, of course, are Lithuania,
the Baltics.
The Baltic states, right? Because if the Russians moved wholeheartedly into Belarus, essentially the front line would be right up against them. And then there's a very fragile connection. You know, for the U.S. perspective, I don't want to say that this is a crisis that was made for Donald Trump, but this is a crisis that was made for
Donald Trump. In what way?
Well, it requires a prudent course of statesmanship that doesn't, on the one hand, say, okay, yeah, we're just going to send divisions, you know, because we're not going to start World War III. On the other hand, we cannot turn our back on what is obviously a fraudulent election. Right. So we have to have a middle ground of support for a legitimate process, but the notion that it's not up to us, it's not our job, and we're not going to fix Belarus. And I think the message from the United States needs to be, hey, let the people of Belarus figure out the people of Belarus, and everybody should stay out of it, including you, Mr. Putin. And I think a strong message from the U.S. saying we should let the Belarusian people decide and determine their future and figure this out is the right course of action. And I think that's a policy that's tailor-made for somebody like Trump, who really does say, what's the American interest?
Yes.
What's the prudent course? How can we do good in the world?
Right.
I think we see that fundamentally under all of his decisions. And so we look for here. Great article that my buddy Kyron Skinner and I did on the national interest, kind of walks through this, just came out today.
On this issue?
Yeah.
You were formed in the belly of the beast that was the Cold War. Compare the Russia of then, the 1980s, 1990s, to the Russia of today. How much has it changed? How much hasn't it changed, Jim?
Well, the single biggest difference, I think, is the Soviet Union had a large cadre of captive nations.
Yes.
Which was an endless pool of resources, manpower, and everything else.
Right.
You know, so it's like a vampire with his own personal blood bank.
Yeah.
Russia today doesn't have that.
Right.
And
it shows economically.
And I think even though many of Putin's instincts are to replicate traditional Soviet imperial policies, he doesn't have the resources to do that. But I think he has the ambition to do that. I think that makes him more dangerous, not less.
Jim, big news that really kind of came and disappeared, isn't being focused on, the first peace deal for more than 20 years in the Middle East, UAE and Israel. Let's play a little thought experiment. Imagine Joe Biden becomes president. What's his problem going to be with dealing with the Middle East?
Well, I think he has two. One, of course, will be, you know, as every administration does, is my answer is I will do the opposite of everything the other guy did. In this case, that would actually be a huge mistake, because the reality is our foreign policy in the Middle East has actually made very significant progress the last 4 years.
To hear the entire conversation of Sebastian Gorka with James Carafano, go to townhallreview.com. Coming up.
I have seen people like this before. I've seen ideas like this before. We cannot let them take over our country.
A stern warning to our country. The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. In the late 1950s, a young man named Fidel Castro identified himself not as a revolutionary, but as a sincere Roman Catholic who wanted more freedoms for his people. Maximo Alvarez was a youngster then, but shortly thereafter, he and his family fled Castro's ultra-repressive communist Cuba for the U.S. The Castro regime had grown into a totalitarian monster. Maximo spoke passionately on Tuesday at the RNC. My friend and radio colleague, Dennis Prager, took a closer look on his program.
I see no difference between the rioters, the BLM rioters, and Marxists elsewhere. Look, one of the founders said she's a Marxist. If you study history, the differences are minuscule. But who studies history? You know, when I tell young people, you know, Stalin killed between 20 and 40 million people, they are much more moved by George Floyd than they are by 20 to 40 million people slaughtered by Stalin, or 60 to 80 million slaughtered by Mao. It's the old line, right? One death is a tragedy, a million is a statistic. Anyway, this man spoke, Maximo Alvarez, Cuban-American. I want you to hear it.
I know all about the past. I'll never forget my own. My family has fled totalitarianism and communism more than once. First my dad from Spain, then from Cuba. But my families don't run away. By the grace of God, I live the American dream, the greatest blessing I ever had. My dad only had a sixth-grade education, told me, don't lose this place. You'll never be as lucky as me. I'm speaking to you today because my family's done abandoning what we rightfully earned. There's no place to hide. Our president is just another family man, a friend, and most important, our elected commander-in-chief who puts America first. Keep in mind, the other guy running for president is mostly concerned about power. Yes, power for them, but not for the benefit of all Americans. I'm speaking to you today because I have seen people like this before. I've seen movements like this before. I've seen ideas like this before. And I am here to tell you, we cannot let them take over our country. They swallow the communist poison pill. If you have a chance, go to the Freedom Tower in Miami. Stop and listen. You can still hear the sounds of those broken promises. It is the sound of waves in the ocean carrying families clinging to pieces of wood. Families with children who can't swim, but willing to risk everything to reach this blessed land. It is the sound of tears hitting the paper of an application to become an American citizen. They don't sound radical to my ears. They sound familiar. And Fidel Castro was asked if he was a communist.
This is really important.
He said he was a Roman Catholic. He knew he had to hide the truth. But the country I was born in is gone, totally destroyed. When I watch the news in Seattle, Chicago, Portland, and other cities, when I see the history being rewritten, when I hear the promises, I've heard echoes of the former life I never wanted to hear again. I see shadows I thought I had outrun. My parents only wanted one person to decide my fate. Me. Not some party member, not some government official, not some bureaucrat. In America, I would decide my own future. I am so grateful to America, the place where I was able to build my American dream through hard work and determination. President Trump knows that the American story was written by people just like you and I, who love our country and take risks to build a future for our families and neighbors. I may be a Cuban born, but I am 100% American. this is the greatest country in the world. And I said this before. If I gave away everything that I have today, it would not equal 1% of what I was given when I came to this great country of ours. The gift of freedom. Right now, it is up to us to decide our fate and to choose freedom over oppression. President Trump, he's fighting the forces of anarchy and communism. And I know he will continue to do just that. And what about his opponent and the rest of the DC swamp? I have no doubt they will hand the country over to those dangerous forces. You and I will decide.
That's right.
Okay. And here's what I've decided.
It was powerful. That's why I didn't say a word. The greatest virus of all is the left. Not liberals. They're just weak. Leftism, here's an ultimate issue thought for you. Leftism is more natural than freedom. The desire to be taken care of, have as little responsibility as possible, is far more natural. You see, one of the reasons America and its values are hated is when you fail in freedom, you are the problem. When you fail in a place with less freedom, well, then you don't bear responsibility for your failure.
Coming up.
And you have the Democratic Party and you have Biden calling her an anti-Semite, but letting her participate in the Democratic Party at this convention. What an outrage.
The final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Stay with it. If you enjoy the Town Hall Review and you are a person of faith, let me introduce you to another podcast I think you'll like. It's the Christian Outlook, and in it, you'll hear the leading voices in the Christian world engaging the issue of the day. This week, pro-life leader Abby Johnson gives a powerful speech at the Republican National Convention.
This election is a choice between two radical anti-life activists and the most pro-life president we have ever had.
Progressives plot the presidency of Joe Biden.
As soon as he gets elected, if he were to, you're going to hear all of these top advisors leaking, whispering to the New York Times, oh my God, Joe didn't know where he was the other day.
California battle churches that defy the state.
Each charge is up to a year in prison.
And the left fights to allow biological men to compete as women.
Frankly, it only takes three biological male bodies to completely erase women from the victory podium entirely.
We've got all this and more. To subscribe, go to ChristianOutlook.com. That's ChristianOutlook.com. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. The recent Democratic convention displayed an openness to radical, even though they seemed intent on keeping them somewhat off stage. Dove Hykind, a longtime New York State Assemblyman who resides in New York City, knew better. In fact, Hykind just released a video on the presence of a radical and anti-Semitic Linda Sarsour at the DNC convention. Larry Elder spoke with Mr. Hykind on his program.
How does she end up popping up at the DNC?
Look, everything is being so orchestrated in this convention. Every moment, they know exactly what they're doing. Linda Sarsour, I mean, she has a record that is beyond belief. She has supported terrorism. She is someone who supports violence. She is a bona fide anti-Semite. But it's people like Linda Sarsour who are hanging around at the this convention. These are the people who are manipulating things. These are the people who are going to play a role. Look, Linda Sarsour said when she was just criticized, actually, by someone in the Biden administration, look, you need us to win this election. How this happened is beyond my comprehension. I mean, it is so outrageous. You know, they talk the talk, all these values, and it's important to respect people and to be against racism and hate. I mean, come on, give me a break. It is insulting to our intelligence to tell us that you did not know about. They knew exactly what they were doing.
Dove, you put together a very, I thought, persuasive and powerful short video on Linda Sarsour, Biden, and the DNC. Let me play it.
How in God's name is Linda Sarsour permitted to speak at the Democratic Convention? My Democratic Party, she is an anti-Semite. She supports terrorism. And you have the Democratic Party and you have Biden calling her an anti-Semite, but letting her participate in the Democratic Party at this convention. What an outrage. The Democratic Party, what it represents, is fraud. If Linda Sarsour is permitted to be part of the Democratic Party and to speak at its convention to mollify Bernie Sanders, then it is pathetic that the Democratic Party should receive the support of Democrats. It is appeasement of the worst kind. Shame on Biden.
They were not going to give President Trump praise for anything, let alone the deal that was negotiated with Israel and UAE. How big of a deal is that?
It is huge. Mm-hmm. It is what every president promised prior to Trump, moving the embassy. And I'm talking now about Democrats and Republicans. No one comes close. I've said it, and I will say it to the very last moment. No president has been a better, true friend in terms of action, not just words. Words are cheap. Action is what counts. Trump has been the best friend that Israel has ever had.
Thanks for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producers Charlie Richards and David Posey and Michael Cook, Alex Perez, Adam Ramsey, Ben Brigman, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.